Today, on a special edition of the West Side Outside, we'll talk about a bill seeking to change regulations on what are being called isolated wetlands. Then we'll hear about the National Duck Stamp Contest, which was held in Wisconsin for the first time. And, of course, we'll take all of your outdoor questions if you call in at 1-800-228-5615. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. In the studio with me, as always, for the West Side Outside segments, we've got the outdoor guys from Western Wisconsin. First, I'll introduce Dave Carlson. He is the host, founder, creator, legacy of Northland Adventures. Dave Carlson, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Beautiful weekend. Here we are in another work week.
Yeah, definitely. Crisp, beautiful. I love this time of year, personally. I really do. Also joining me in studio, former outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, Joe Knight. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Coming up this hour, we're going to first talk with Republican Representative Jim Steinecke. He's introduced a bill that has to do with regulation of some wetlands in Wisconsin. After that, we'll get a bit of a rebuttal from George Meyer. He's in opposition of the proposed changes. Then later in the hour, we'll hear from Tim Isley. He's a freelance outdoor writer in Madison. And he'll be talking about ducks, we'll be talking about change in leadership at the Department of Natural Resources, you name it. And again, if you've got a question or a comment, let us know, 1-800-228-5615. Republican Representative Jim Steinecke joins us now by phone. Welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Rich, and I agree. This is the best time of year, isn't it?
I really like it. I don't like what it leads up to, necessarily, but... I like the crisp.
It does lead up to deer hunting. So
that's true.
Everybody's out in the woods with their bows and pretty soon with their guns in about a month, right?
Yeah, that's true. And we'll be doing another West Side Outside update for that. So I want to get right to the bill, Representative Steinecke. This has to do with what are called isolated wetlands. So how do you define them?
Well, so basically what this bill boils down to is we're among just a few states that regulate what are called non-federal wetlands. So the federal government has control over federal wetlands, and they have their rules set for that. They left non-federal, which are isolated and artificial wetland regulations, to the states. We're one of the just a handful of states that actually regulate these non-federal wetlands. And so what this bill seeks to do is just seeks to keep us more restrictive in how we develop in and around those wetlands than just about any other state out there. But it also recognizes that in the vast majority of cases, these artificial and isolated wetlands really don't serve a greater purpose in the process by which these applications are approved is lengthy and time-consuming. So we're trying to make that a little bit more efficient.
So when you say that they don't serve the same sort of purpose, I thought I heard you right, as other wetlands, is that because I think one of the main points here is that they're cut off from navigable water bodies? That is, they don't directly feed into, say, a stream or a lake or something like that? Is that the idea?
Yeah, right. The federal wetlands are connected to a larger body of water, whether it's streams, lakes, creeks, whatever that be, navigable waterways. These isolated wetlands are more cut off. Now, not saying that all isolated wetlands don't serve a purpose. Obviously, in a lot of cases, they do. But we're just looking to make this process more reasonable and more reflective of what the rest of the country does.
Jim, Dave Carlson, why at this time? Why now?
These are complaints. I mean, we've been hearing from not only developers but homeowners throughout the state. I think just about every representative and senator out there can point to an issue in their several issues in their district where this process just hasn't made sense. I mean, we have a development over by us here in northeastern Wisconsin where the guy goes for developer goes in, does a wetland delineation. Because of the recession hit in 2008, they put off development for a number of years. They go back this year to do a new wetland delineation because the old one expired. And all of a sudden, there's, you know, acres upon acres of wetlands that just magically appeared over the course of the last 10 years that weren't there before. So it puts a whole different spin on the development that wasn't there before. So those are the kinds of issues that we're trying to get at here.
And
where does the bill sit now?
What's that, Dave?
Where does the bill sit now?
So right now we have circulated for co-sponsorship. It's introduced in the assembly, waiting on referral to a committee. Then once it gets referred to committee, it'll go for hearings in both the Senate and the assembly, and then for committee action, and then hopefully the floor vote at some point.
So in order for it to get to a committee, even, it has to be moved by Representative or Speaker Voss?
Right, well, it has to be referred to a committee. So he doesn't have, that's not in his purview whether or not to refer it. He's got to refer it to a committee within 10 days, and then then it goes to a committee for action. But I do want to say at the beginning that we have been contacted by several outdoors groups that we work closely with on other issues, and they had some concerns. So we're doing our best to address those concerns. But I think at the base level of this bill, it's a pretty common sense bill.
What kind of issues did those outdoor groups raise?
I think Ducks Unlimited had come into our office and they had talked. They're worried about protecting the higher quality habitats, which obviously is something we're concerned about as well. Personally, as somebody that has been in and around the real estate business for better than a decade here, developers are not, especially now, they're not looking to fill in marshes. They're not looking to fill in areas that are naturally wet. Most of these issues that we're dealing with throughout the state are like really small pockets of quote-unquote wetlands, which when you look at them, nobody would really recognize them as wetlands by looking at them.
I want to remind our listeners that you can join in this conversation as well. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. And if you'd like, we can also take a comment or a question via our Facebook page. Check out the West Side on Facebook. So I just wanted to go back, Representative Steinicke, the original protections for these isolated wetlands, and this is as I saw it in a news article from the Journal Sentinel, I believe, but it mentioned that these current existing rules were passed by Republicans and Democrats in response to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. So does this ruling not apply anymore? Can you help me understand that?
No, the ruling still applies. Basically, what the ruling did was kick the decision on whether to regulate these non-federal wetlands back to the states. So like I said, at that time, there were basically the decision was back in the states' hands. A handful of states decided to move forward with regulations. A vast majority of states did not. So Wisconsin was one of those states that did. Now, I don't blame the people at that time for going down this road. But as in many cases, once you've been living with a regulation for a number of years, you start to see unintended consequences of it. And I think that's what we're seeing in this case after, 15, 16 years of this being in effect.
Yeah, Representative, this is Joe Knight. For those of us who are old enough to remember that day, we used to believe that all wetlands, even these so-called isolated wetlands, were connected by the water table. Then came the Supreme Court ruling in 2001, and Wisconsin was the very first state to step in to protect these isolated wetlands, and it was a bipartisan thing under Republican Governor Scott McCallum. And everyone, that was Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, all the sportsmen's groups were praising this and on board with this. And I'm wondering what has happened in the intervening years. Environmental protection used to be bipartisan.
Well, environmental protection still is bipartisan. But, there's I just go back to what's become of the actual practice on the ground. So, just to give you an example, we had an issue, and this has to deal with artificial wetlands. We had an issue up by us, not unlike many other areas throughout the state where there was a parcel that was gotten ready for development. The development fell through. The builder was coming in to do some development on the piece of land. The development fell through. A couple of years later, a guy comes back, and because they had moved some earth around on the property over that 3 or 4 years that it sat there, all of a sudden there was wetland plants and wetland characteristics on the property that weren't there before. So again, sent the process through a whole different level of regulations than was on the property before that machinery had moved dirt around. So again, we're trying to get at a common sense level of regulation. We still require mitigation on these isolated wetlands, which I think is important. But we also have to recognize that 99% of these applications to fill in these isolated wetlands get approved. So what is the process there for, other than delaying and causing expense onto homeowners and developers, when we're still going to require mitigation under this process anyway?
Okay. Joanne.
Representative, this has been a long-term argument. I was an environmental reporter for a long time, and we heard this with Menards and various other developments, and particularly the isolated wetlands that are sometimes called ephemeral wetlands. And the way the wetlands people look at it, is they go out and take a soil sample, and they say this is a wetland soil. Over thousands of years, this has been an ephemeral wetland. But if you go out there on a dry year, you can grow corn on it. These ones seem to have perennially been the most controversial, but they do have wetland functions still. They have a wetland soil type.
You mentioned wetland mitigation. So is the ratio still the same, Representative, the 1.2 acres for every acre that is filled?
Yes, absolutely. We keep that ratio the same. And actually, under this bill, we're working to help create more wetlands faster, because currently under law in the in-lieu fee program, where you can pay into a wetland mitigation bank to create wetlands, there's $15 million sitting in that bank, and it's not being expended currently because the rules between the Army Corps of Engineers and the DNR are such that it hasn't allowed any of these new wetlands to be created. So what we're trying to do is work with the DNR to require them to do a better job of getting that money out the door so we can actually start creating more wetlands as well.
With regard to the in-lieu fee program, I've been following that a little bit in my reporting duties, and as you mentioned, the $15 million is accurate. And it sounds like the last I heard, they're starting to take samples down in southeastern Wisconsin. So it's been taking a long time, years, 5 years, I think. So would this make it easier for wetland mitigation people to establish banks? Or I don't understand how it make it easier.
Well, this is directing the DNR to do whatever is necessary to reduce the hurdles that are currently in place for moving these wetland mitigation projects forward. Because one of the things that we're hearing from people who actually want to create these wetlands is that the DNR, in some cases, is requiring that these developers of the wetlands certify that for 5 years a wetlands will be free of invasive species. Which is obviously a pretty high hurdle for anybody coming in. So we're directing the DNR, without being too prescriptive, to look for ways to make the process more efficient.
Joe Knight?
Representative, we should maybe do a little background for our listeners who don't know what mitigation means.
Yeah, good point.
The requirement is that when you fill a wetland, you're supposed to restore an equal or slightly greater, I think, is 1.2% in your bill of wetland. But is there any requirement that still be in the area? Like if I drain a wetland in Brown County, am I supposed to find and restore a wetland in the same vicinity, or can it be anywhere in the state?
No, we keep current law on that. So we don't change anything as far as the mitigation process. The way the mitigation process works now is exactly the way it would work under this bill.
All right, we've got one caller on the line right now, and we're going to go to him right now. Willem in Colfax, I've got you on the line. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, I was just, about this whole issue of wetland mitigation and things like that. I guess what's concerning to me is, like, a wetland isn't just a hole in the ground with water in it. It's a part of, usually parts of systems of springs or creeks or seeps or things that, like it's a water system having to do with other water systems in the area. So this idea that we can just continue to destroy natural wetlands and replace them by digging a hole somewhere and filling it with water, that's not a wetland. It's not the same. I mean, I think it's a system that's more complex and complicated,
Willem,
integral to a ecological system than just a hole in the ground with water in it.
We hear you loud and clear. Representative Steinecke, what about that? You know, there are concerns that, at best, the wetlands that are restored only have about half of the function or maybe 60% of the function that they did before. What does that concern you with when pushing this bill?
Sure. Well, obviously, we're taking a look at all that. But what people have to understand is, let's say you've got a 40-acre parcel that you're developing. Under current law, in a lot of times, you're taking these wetlands and you're obviously not developing on them. They're, you know, set off in corners of lots or what have you with restrictions around them. But over time, these you know, quote-unquote isolated wetlands are drying out anyway. We have the same thing here in a subdivision, you know, another development over by us where there were some quote-unquote wetlands that were protected in the subdivision. You go by there, it is nothing more than two vacant lots, and it's about as dry as it could be, and there's virtually nothing on the property. There's no wetland storage. There's no water storage there, but it's being restricted from development. So, again, 99% of these permits are granted anyway as it stands today. So what we're looking to do is just speed up the process for developing in and around these, but still requiring the mitigation component. So it's not a lot different from current law.
Representative of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association says there's about 5.5 million acres of wetlands remaining in the state, and that this would impact about, if this bill becomes law, it could impact 1 million of those, or roughly 20%. What's in store for those properties?
A vast majority of these, even under this bill, will not be touched in any way. I mean, I think, again, what we have to realize is that homeowners and developers have limited resources, right? So they're not going to go and take a five-acre water storage wetland that's, holding water for even a few months out of the year and fill that in. It just doesn't make economic sense in the long run for them to do so. So really what we're trying to get at are these isolated pockets, these drainage ditches and farm fields and things like that that are being developed anyway, and just make that process more efficient.
All right, Representative Steinecke, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to take our first break here on the west side. When we come back, we'll hear from George Meyer of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. Representative, thank you so much for being part of the west side.
Yep. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care.
Support for WPR comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Madison, announcing a fall food event through October 31st, including bird seed, suet, and seed cylinders. WBUMadison.com. Discover a refuge in your own backyard.
UW-Eau Claire Continuing Education connects people with possibilities by providing degrees and certificates for working adults, professional and workforce development, youth and community programs, and resources for business. Details online at uwec.ly/ce.
Support for WPR.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thank you for joining us this Monday morning. We just heard from Representative Jim Steinecke. He is the author of a bill to change wetland regulations in Wisconsin regarding isolated wetlands, which are not directly connected to water bodies such as marshes, streams, rivers, and lakes. We are going to hear in just a bit from George Meyer of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, and I believe that we have him on the line right now. George Meyer, okay. Is that you by chance?
Yes, it is.
Oh, thank goodness. I hung up on you during the break. I apologize. I probably shouldn't tell the audience that, but either way, we're good to go. George Meyer is the executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, joins us by phone from Madison, I believe. Or
yes.
All right. So, George Meyer, thanks for being on the program. We appreciate it. Again, I'm joined by Joe Knight and Dave Carlson, the outdoor guys in the studio with me right now. So, were you able to hear part of the conversation with Representative Steinicke and his arguments for the bill, that it's basically looking to make it a little less restrictive, a little easier, a little cheaper for developers and for potential home builders?
I did hear Representative Steinicke's statements, and I've met with Jim and others. There's a lot of sports groups that are against it. Trout Unlimited, Ducks Unlimited, Waterfowl Association, Pheasants Forever, Wildlife Federation, of course, the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. He has a point, but it's a small part of what's impacted by this bill. There are artificial wetlands that appear sometimes where there's a subdivision we put on. Also, there are sometimes what we call prior converted wetlands. These are agricultural fields, I think our groups probably don't have any difficulty with coming up something to deal if there's an acre or so of these prior converted wetlands in the middle of a subdivision. We think those things can be dealt with, and have expressed to the authors our willingness to work with them on this issue. However, as I think it was mentioned earlier, that's a small portion of the non-federal wetlands. You mentioned earlier there's a 20% of wetlands in the state, over a million acres, are affected by this bill. And some people might think that, well, non-federal might mean not important. These are some of the finest wetlands in the state of Wisconsin. That's why the legislature in 2001 unanimously approved taking over state authority. Many of the marshes you see across that are next to a river or lake, and you'll see, and some of these are very large, are, for instance, these are areas where we grow our waterfowl populations in the state of Wisconsin. And Wisconsin does furnish, habitat for waterfowl ducks and, non-game species. And candidly, these are some of the best duck hunting areas in the state. I hunt on one every year. These are phenomenal wetland areas. The other thing that people talk about isolated wetlands, but non-federal wetlands also include what are called headwaters in wetlands. And what that is the upper reaches of virtually every stream in the state that has wetlands adjacent to it. Those wetlands adjacent to those streams, including our very valuable trout streams, are non-federal wetlands. And they should not be filled in. And they would be totally deregulated under this bill. So we're looking to work with legislators to deal with the development problems, which we think can be. But, we may be talking about 90% of those wetlands that are covered by this bill are really valuable wetlands. Let me give you an example of some of the wetlands that are affected by it. Many of the dunes in Door County and adjacent to Lake Michigan, like at Point Beach, Shivering Sands, you've probably heard of the ridges in Door County. Those are non-federal wetlands. There's portions of Rush Lake, which is a good duck hunting factory, that are some of the brooding areas are isolated from the lake itself and would be impacted. Portions of the Chicagoan Sloughs, which is an internationally protected or designated waterway, it's internationally protected. Dave Carlson, you'd recognize Chippewa Moraine and the lower Chippewa River Delta. There's a lot of non-federal wetlands associated by it. So throughout the state, we have these extremely valuable wetlands that would be allowed to be filled without any regulation. The point was raised about mitigation. For the non for these wetlands, such as the artificial wetlands, or maybe some of the portion of these prior converted wetlands are for agricultural production. Yes, mitigation works, but building a putting wetlands into a mitigation bank doesn't help when you're filled in the wetland at the headwaters of a trout stream. That doesn't replace it. You need those wetlands up there are important to take into account. They're recharge areas, produce water into the stream. In many cases, they may be filtering out pollutants, and that's why those trout streams are so valuable. So George, this bill needs to slow down and get some experts involved in helping to write it.
All right, George, I just want to remind callers that if you want to be part of the conversation, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Joe Knight.
Yeah, George, Joe Knight here. Played devil's advocate a little bit. One thing that seemed to bother Representative Steinke was these, sometimes we call them seasonal wetlands or wetlands that on a dry year, it'll just look like an open field without any cattails. And I know you can drive a newspaper editor out there and look and point and say, hey, I want to build a shopping mall here. I don't see any cattails. This isn't a wetland. What's your defense for that? What are the importance of these seasonal wetlands?
Well, I can tell you the duck hunting marsh I hunt on has portions that are dry some years. Some of these are, and they're called ephemeral ponds or ephemeral wetlands. They have very valuable habitat. And some years, yes, we have droughts. They may be dry. But other years are fantastic wetlands and produce all kinds of critters, both game and non-game, some cases endangered species. But there are some, you can see them where there's a Representative Steinke has an example on his website where, that's a farm field and it's been farmed for years. You can see that's mottled soil, but candidly it would never be a valuable wetland if it were laid fallow. But we need to figure out how to carve out that portion which deals with development interests. But ephemeral ponds can be outstanding fish and wildlife habitat.
Dave Carlson.
George, Dave Carlson here. In the conversation we had with Representative Steinke, he said that the vast majority of these isolated ponds will not be affected and that developers and homeowners just don't have the resources to do, at least the picture he painted, do that kind of damage to the resources that remain. Do you buy that?
I don't, and I understand, and Jim's right to this extent. There are developers that would never touch these things. But not everybody is a good developer, and I could give examples. I won't go into it where I've seen these things develop over time, where individual landowners will get involved. They'll try to drain it and then fill it. We were losing before the Clean Water Act passed. I was involved at DNR there. We were losing substantial amounts of wetlands to development in the state. And that's why the department, even before the 2001, established wetlands regulations where not only did we rely on federal permits, there was a state certification process. And sometimes we thought the federal government wasn't protective of the unique wetlands we had in the state. And after we had that process, applying the federal standards, but in a way that impacted Wisconsin, there was a substantial reduction. History would show that these wetlands, many of these wetlands, will be filled over time. So let's protect them. Let's come up with the right classification and not leave it to chance that everyone's going to be a great developer or a good developer or have a strong environmental ethic when they look at some of these.
George, we've got a caller from Ladysmith. Mike, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I guess I generally agree with George's approach or take on it. The bottom line is these developers, they purchase these properties with their eyes wide open, fully knowing that the good reason or the big part of the reason they get them for a reasonable price is because they have a wetland on them. And then they want to go around and have the law changed so that now they can develop them for purposes that they, the whole reason they were cheap property to begin with was that they weren't able to be developed or they were going to be difficult to develop. And I guess I just have a challenge with the mindset of the earlier representative when he talks about that while homeowners and developers aren't going to expend the money. You know, the money to do this, these small wetlands, are a death by a thousand cuts to the overall ecological background for the state of Wisconsin. An acre here, an acre there, multiplied by tens of thousands of developers and landowners over tens of years, pretty soon you have a very reduced wetland ecology out there. And where do you recover it from? Because they almost never do a mitigation or a replacement in a place that is where water naturally wants to be anyway. I don't get the short-sightedness. It's the short-sightedness of this entire deal. We gotta remember what Chief Seattle talked about. You know, let's think out several generations.
Thank you for
do our planning accordingly.
Thanks, Mike, for the call and for the comments. I appreciate it. George Meyer, any response?
He's exactly right. I think this change would have an impact for many years. And sure, the first year you might lose 1,000 or 2,000 or, 5,000, 10,000 valuable acres of wetland besides the ones that are being discussed by Representative Steinke. That adds up a little bit here, a little bit there. There's a famous Supreme Court quotations, and pretty soon our vast wetland resources, which are valuable in the state, to tourism and hunting and fishing and tourism income will be lost. So we just need to be slow this down, get it right, and protect the vast majority of non-federal wetlands that are important to Wisconsin.
George, Joe Knight here. Let's just clarify how mitigation works. We had a caller earlier in the program who was concerned that you could dig a hole anywhere and call that a new wetland, but you're really mitigation. You're supposed to be restoring former wetlands, aren't you?
That is the case, but they are not. You know, and some you can create some good wetlands, but there are some wetlands you can't replicate. Floodplain forests, as an example, how do you do that? Some of these are virtually impossible. There's a class of some of the rarest and finest wetlands are called fens. And they have special soil types, alkaline soil, as I understand. And I'm not a scientist, but they can't be. You cannot create one of those. And there's, the bogs and the kelp moraine and things of that nature. You just cannot recreate those through mitigation. There's some wetlands you can mitigate, but are they in the right place for flood storage, for the protection of other of the waterway in the case of these up on the upper reaches of our trout streams? How do you are you going to build it there? That mitigation would say you wouldn't have to.
All good. George, thanks very much.
George, we appreciate you coming on the show today and talking about your and a lot of other conservation-minded folks' opposition to this bill. So we'll see how it goes. But George Meyer, Wisconsin Wildlife Federation Executive Director, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from Tim Isley. He's a freelance outdoor writer in Madison. We're going to hear about ducks, and we're going to shoot the breeze, really. 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment, this is the West Side.
WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, with indoor water parks and theme parks, dining, and Halloween happenings. More about entertainment is at wisdells.com. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world.
Registration's underway for the Hmong Women's Summit in Eau Claire later this month. That project, designed to empower women in the Hmong community to take on leadership roles, takes place at UW-Eau Claire October 27th and 28th. Details can be found on the Facebook page Hmong Women's Summit.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Apologize for technical difficulties we just had. We are talking about all things outdoors. We've got the outdoor guys on the program, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson, for the rest of the hour. We are also glad to welcome Tim Isley. He's a freelance outdoor writer based in Madison. Tim, are you there?
I'm there, Rich. Thank you very much. And hi to Joe and to Dave. Great to be on with those guys.
Good morning, Tim.
Morning, Tim. One thing we should tell folks about Tim, for full disclosure, was that he used to be in Eau Claire for a while. He was like 100 years ago, he was a public information person for the DNR in Eau Claire.
Back in the 1970s, a few years ago. Right?
Well, welcome to the program, Tim. So we've got, were you able to hear the conversation leading up to this point by chance?
Well, I did, and I thought it was interesting in your discussion about wetlands, and I give an awful lot of credit to George Meyer for what he's doing, standing up for some of the resources that can't talk themselves. But it sort of brought to mind a little bit of a similar thing that, you know, this past summer, or actually in September, we had the Federal Duck Stamp Contest, which was held in Wisconsin for the very first time ever. And I think the importance here, and where it ties into your discussion, is it's all about saving habitat in wetlands. They are so important, and even to the little critters, you know, to the reptiles, amphibians, and to waterfowl, up to whooping cranes and other species like that, it is just so critically important. And this when they had the Federal Duck Stamp Contest up in Stevens Point, the first time ever that it's been held in Wisconsin, one of the people who had a chance to make a few comments, which I thought was really interesting, and I'd like to just mention for your audience, and that was Christine Thomas, the dean of the College of Natural Resources up at UW-Stevens Point. She used an analogy, and she talked about how people in the state of Wisconsin are so enamored, of course, with the Green Bay Packers, and people have stock certificates now in the Green Bay Packers. And she held one up, and she said how proud she was. But then she held up the Federal Duck Stamp, and she said that this really is very similar. It's almost like being a stock owner in the waterfowl and the wetlands of the state, because for this little, you know, $25 is what you pay for a Federal Duck Stamp, and that money goes into habitat. It goes into wetlands. It goes into upland nesting cover. And it's really like being a stockholder in some of the wildlife in this state. And I think it's so important. I really thought her analogy was good. And I think it ties right into what you were talking about there with the importance of wetlands.
What is the importance, or what kind of a benefit does the state get out of having the contest in Stevens Point? I mean, it's first time, so what's the big deal?
Yeah, well, the big deal is this. I mean, the Federal Duck Stamp Contest started, well, the duck stamp started in 1934. Ding Darling, who was a political cartoonist from Des Moines, Iowa, a nationally syndicated cartoonist, and he then went on to the forerunner of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, brought the Federal Duck Stamp out because basically they realized we need to set aside some of these lands that aren't good for agriculture, but they also, back, of course, after the drought and the drought years and the Depression, 1920s, they needed wetlands because the ducks were going down in numbers. So they needed some way to fund that, and they came up with the idea of a federal duck stamp. And what happens is that every waterfowl hunter age 16 and over has to purchase one. If you want to go out and hunt ducks or geese, it's required that you buy one. And right now the cost is $25. You go down to the post office and you buy that. But the money goes into wetlands and habitat. And ever since it's been formed, I think right now they've raised over, well, from 34, they've raised like something like $800 million, and they've purchased almost 6 million acres. They purchase or they lease this property. Some of it is out in the Dakotas. Some of it is with the National Wildlife Refuges. They've used it with Horicon National Wildlife Refuge in Wisconsin, Trempealeau National Wildlife Refuge, another wildlife refuge right in the very middle of Wisconsin. They also use it for the waterfowl production areas. We've got those up in northwestern Wisconsin, just, you know, outside of Eau Claire up there, and down in central Wisconsin. So these are nesting, really, gems where waterfowl can nest, but also other wildlife. I mean, herons and cranes and other wildlife use it. So, but by having that contest here in the state, it just brought more visibility to the federal duck stamp, but also to wetlands and the importance of them. And we had some of the best wildlife artists in the nation come into Wisconsin, and it was all held up at UW-Stevens Point.
Very
cool. So it's really a good opportunity to see some of the best waterfowl art in the country.
Tim, you want to tell us what duck is the poster child for the duck stamp this year?
Well, the poster child, the next poster child is going to be the mallard. The mallard.
Boring.
Boring? Joe just said it was boring.
Boring. Well, there's a flock of mallards coming in that Bob Hoffman from Minnesota drew, that painted, that won the stamp this year. And it's a really nice painting of several mallards coming in. And the interesting thing, again, is the Hoffman family. The Hoffman brothers, Bob, Jim, and Joe, have won like 13 federal duck stamps. They do some wonderful art. Mm. And the interesting thing is that next year, none of those three will be able to compete. So it's wide open, and any artists that want to compete in that, next year a Hoffman can outwin it because they have to sit out for 3 years. And Bob, Jim, and Joe have won during the last 3 years. So you won't have a Hoffman winning. So the artists ought to get out their paintbrushes and start putting together their paintings and submit. This year's federal duck stamp that we have, for any of us who are duck waterfowl hunters, it features three Canada geese, and that was drawn by Jim Hoffman. And they're species that we see commonly. One of the species that was eligible this year was the harlequin duck. It's a gorgeous bird. Find it up in Alaska. And we see some on the Great Lakes here, but it's a gorgeous bird, but a very, very unusual one. But that didn't get selected. The common mallards are what was selected for next year.
I think they're beautiful. Dave Carlson.
Beautiful. Wetlands, waterfowl, there's always controversy surrounding them. There's also controversy, of course, around deer. And one of the biggest things that deer hunters are going to notice this year is that you no longer will be required to validate or attach a carcass tag upon harvest of a deer. Same for
turkeys, right?
Geese and turkeys as well.
Right.
This is going to be an eye opener to some who have not heard about it or are learning about it right now for the first time.
It's brand new this year with deer, turkeys, and geese, and so it's going to take some getting used to. You still have to register the animal. But it goes back to legislators who are introducing legislation and making changes, and legislators are doing what they think people want, but I have questions about whether that's good for the natural resources. I'd rather see these come up through the Department of Natural Resources, quite frankly, and having legislators involved in all these changes is very questionable to me.
There's debate over whether or not there's going to be an enforcement issue coming out of this. Some think not. Some think that they have the tools now to do it any other way they choose, and others think it could be very damaging.
Well, discretion is always a part of law enforcement, so every law enforcement officer has discretion, so obviously they'll have to look at the circumstances and find out what are the known facts of what a person did, how they transported their animal, how they documented the animal, whether they registered the animal. But there's going to be, I would think, more work involved for the conservation wardens in this state, yes.
Okay. probably closer to deer season, we should do something on this because it'll be a change for all hunters. We're going
Definitely
through a lot of changes. Yeah. And this was apparently Representative Clefish tucked this into the budget bill, which did not involve much. We used to have this process in Wisconsin where we would kind of run things through these spring hearings of the Conservation Congress, and they would make a recommendation, and then maybe the Resources Board or the legislature would follow up on this. But now I guess if you want something passed, slip it into the budget bill, and they got to approve it sooner or later.
It's a quick way to do it. I remember when way back when I first started hosting this, not long after, we were talking about the transition leading up to getting rid of the traditional carcass tags or the registration stations. I'm just wondering about loss of tradition. I mean, it's totally different now than it was even 10 years ago where, you know, it'd be a whole event. I would stake out by a gas station and watch the deer come in, and that's completely gone now.
When you were a reporter, it was always nice because you could always go there and,
get your quotes.
A kid would have his first deer and be beaming. You know,
yeah, and there's your story.
Tim, you do a lot of coverage of the, as a freelance writer, of a lot of coverage of the Department of Natural Resources, the Natural Resources Board, and so forth, which seems destined now to have a new secretary. What do you know about the governor's choice, Dan Meyer of Eagle River?
Well, unfortunately, I don't know a lot. I know that he was in the legislature. I know that he's from up north. I think he had some concerns over wetlands and some things like that. And so we're going to have to wait and see here just how things turn out with him. You know, but it goes back to this, the change that was made back when Tommy Thompson was the governor. And, you know, our old Wisconsin Conservation Department, and back then the Conservation Commission, and then it became the Department of Natural Resources back, I think, in 1969, and we got the Natural Resources Board, and it used to be that this board of citizens, or a commission of citizens, who were, yes, they were appointed by the governor, but they were the ones who selected a secretary of the Department of Natural Resources, and they would go through and filter out the applicants and look at the backgrounds, and often those people came from within a natural resources profession. And now we don't get that. Now we're getting politicians who are appointed to head the Department of Natural Resources. And by just having a natural resources board, a citizen commission, it just takes it a little bit of arm's length away from direct politics. And I think that's really good. And I think it's a big mistake, the system that we have now. And so, you know, we'll have to give Secretary Meyer a chance, see how he does. But the problem is he's going to be responding to the governor. In the past, the secretary responded to the Natural Resources Board, who hired that person. And that's, I think, it's a big change, and we're seeing the effects with some of the elimination of some of the science bureaus and opening more things to politicians to have input into what's going on, and I think it's a mistake.
For what it's worth, I do believe I saw some articles talking about some conservation groups basically being cautiously optimistic in that this gentleman is less directly linked to developers, organizations, but we'll have to see. I really don't know.
Then Kathy Stepp?
Yeah.
It's not setting the bar too high.
So, with regard to Kathy Stepp, I wanted to talk about that. Any thoughts, gentlemen, on Kathy Stepp climbing the ladder, taking the next step to the EPA? Anybody?
I think it's not a surprise. I think it's, you know, again, a political payoff for having done what she did with the Department of Natural Resources. I think she was a home builder, and so I think that she was looking out primarily for, you know, our Department of Natural Resources almost became a department of business, and that's what they're looking out for rather than natural resources. And so she was going down, I believe she was building a retirement home down in Missouri, and we expected her to be announcing her resignation at some point and probably spending more time down in Missouri. And so then she got appointed to this position, which I think will be out of Kansas City with the EPA, but that's what we also see now with the EPA, with putting somebody in charge of the EPA who really wants to tear down the EPA and tear down the regulations. So that's, unfortunately, the situation we have.
Joe Knight.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I would say about her was she had good communication skills. She was a businesswoman and a former state senator, I believe. But no, she didn't. She didn't really understand the mission of the DNR, I don't think. And she was very much the governor's appointee.
Say, we've got one last phone call today, and we're going to go to Mark and Alma. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to call in. I've been out of cell reception, but I've been listening to the radio, and finally I got my tractor around the right side of the hill. It seems to me that there's an effort by the legislature to emaciate the DNR, and this is just more continuance of that same thing. Our DNR was set up to protect the resources that are owned by the public, especially our water aquifer. And I enjoy drinking water and a little beer once in a while, too. Anyway.
All right.
But I'm just upset about that, I guess.
Gotcha. Mark, thank you so much for the call. Any thoughts, Tim Isley? We've got about a minute left.
Well, that's the problem with having politicians who are then appointed to become secretaries of the agencies. And not having that arm's length removal from the Natural Resources Board and basing things on science. And unfortunately, I think Mark has got a valid point, and that's the situation. We need people to step up and tell the politicians that we want a department which manages based on science, and we'd like a professional in that position.
Is the role of the reporter to be an advocate, too?
Yes.
Well, I might disagree with that. Joe Knight, very quick.
Tim, we'll have to another time talk about your reporting on the duck stings out on the Mississippi River.
I'm sorry we didn't get to that, but that was really interesting articles. But Tim Isley, he's a freelance writer, outdoor writer with down in Madison. Thank you so much for joining us. Pleasure meeting you and having you on the program.
Thank you. It's great to be with you guys. Thank you.
Good to hear from you.
Also, thanks, as always, to the Outdoor Guys, to all of our callers, to Representative Jim Steinecke and George Meyer. We appreciate it. Next week, we're going to talk about the Hmong Women's Summit happening at UW-Eau Claire. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.